Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host, as always. And today we are joined by Diane Gilson, a transformative expert in QuickBooks and job cost accounting, specializing in construction and manufacturing sectors. With over 30 years of experience, Diane is a master at converting complex accounting challenges into streamlined, effective solutions. Her company, InfoPlus Accounting, Inc., focuses on elevating QuickBooks use to its full potential. Diane's passion lies in empowering small to mid-sized businesses with accurate financial tools for growth and profitability. An acclaimed trainer, consultant, and author, she's dedicated to turning business dreams into financial realities. I've asked Diane to join us here today to share her story, plus her valuable insights and strategies for financial success. So, Diane, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Doing great. Yeah. Probably not as great as all that beach that I see behind you there, but because I'm in Michigan.
Yeah,
but Michigan, at least it's not snowing here.
I miss the snow to a certain extent. It is nice and warm here. This is just a Zoom background, but it is where I lived when I first moved to the Philippines. And I actually just spent five nights, 6 days there at the beginning of this month again. But I miss the snow. I miss the seasons. I really do. I miss the... Because here it's just the same day every day. They've got two seasons, hot and wet. And you're not really sure if it's dry season or rainy season ever. Because they say there's a dry and a rainy season. And I'm like, I'm not really sure about that. It's just like the same song every day, which is nice. But I almost crave the change of season sometimes, because there's just like a mentality like, oh, fall's here, winter's coming, I better prepare. There's like a mentality that comes with it. I actually read this book about working with Filipinos. Friend of mine, he's a VP of a company with 6,000 staff here, and in it talks about the cultural differences and like where we're from. You've got a limited amount of time to grow your food, so things like punctuality, being on time, schedules, those are high priority because people will starve. Whereas here, it's the banana tree will still be there tomorrow, and it's just going to grow food anyhow. And so it's just the difference in culture because of things like that. Sure. And anyway, I thought
understandable. As long as you understand it, then you can work with it. Yeah.
I thought it was really funny, especially a lot of the colonizers when they came, they would be late to things. So it's actually like part of the culture. If it's your birthday or something, that you show up last and actually very late, because it means you're important. Everyone's waiting for you. Whereas from our cultures, it's like the exact opposite. It is like, where are you? You were supposed to be here 20 minutes ago. So it's just anyhow. So before we get into your illustrious career, how did you even get started? Is this, were your parents entrepreneurs? Is accounting in the family blood of some sort, or?
Well, accounting, no. Business, yes. My parents were chiropractors. And of course, every independent doctor has to run a business, as do many other professionals have to run businesses. So I did in my high school and college years, I would help out at the office and see that there was a process for running everything in the background that was aside from what my parents did.
Okay. So you grew up as a kid, it sounds like, helping understand the ins and outs of running a business.
And then I had one interesting job where I ended up having to submit reports, gather money and submit reports. And that was fun. I enjoyed that. And I thought I was going to teach English. And when I did my student teaching, it was in junior high and the kids were just absolutely horrible. And I just decided, nope, teaching English is not my thing. And then I had to figure something else out. And ultimately, I settled on accounting and decided that I would head in that direction.
How old were you when you decided you're like, accounting is for me?
I think I was probably mid-20s, mid to late 20s, because, you know, took me a while to get through school because I put myself through school. And I tried some other things along the way to just support myself and get through school. And then finally decided, you know what, I want to get out of school. And decided that what I had picked up the most classes in was not going to ever get me a job. And so I shifted things around. I got a minor in accounting, but was able to graduate faster rather than doing a switch of my majors. And then I went back in and picked up the equivalent of a major in accounting after I graduated with a bachelor's.
Got it. And so you ventured on your own, hang up a shingle, away you go. And it was just raining money
well, no,
and sunshine
not,
and rainbows?
Not quite like that. No, not quite like that. I worked as a bookkeeper for an honor society, National Honor Society. And then I went to work for an accounting firm, for a CPA firm for 3 years. And then I went into banking for 13 years. And then I started my company. So I had a lot of other background in the accounting arena before I started my own company in 94.
Got it. Wow. So that's, what were some of the lessons, I guess, learned? Because for a lot of people, finance might seem very simple. Like money comes in, money goes out, and you track where it goes. So obviously you've got a wide, very experienced. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. If you're just doing a cash basis business, then yeah, it's a little bit more like that. You just look in the checkbook and you see how much money you have and hope that it's a positive number. But in reality, with accounting, once you start understanding what's called accrual-based accounting, where you have receivables and payables and so on, you find out that there are some basic principles to work with, but in many cases, there's more than one way to do things. And there's more than one proper way to do things. Okay. There's certain decisions that you make along the road, and learning under what circumstances you make which decision is very interesting. And so it's always challenging, and every business is different. So learning how to adapt those concepts and principles to the clients that you're working with and to the circumstances you're working in really make it very interesting as you move forward.
Right. Oh, 100%. And so when you did finally decide to hang out your own shingle, was it just money falling from the sky and sunshine and rainbows the whole way through? You were obviously very good at what you did.
Oh,
so
yes.
much experience.
It was so easy.
The skies opened
not,
up and yeah.
Not. No, I mean, I knew that I wanted to lean towards management accounting. I had been working in a CPA firm and doing audits and doing taxes. And I really wasn't excited, didn't love taxes. But, and then when I got into banking, I did internal auditing for a while and got my certified internal auditor designation. Then I moved over to the financial side and handled the management accounting for the bank. And that involved training people. And I'd always liked management accounting. So when I started my company, I decided I really wanted to focus on the management accounting side. However, when I started out, I felt I had to do tax work, which we did for, and I say we, me and other people that worked with me, we did some taxes for the first few years. And I finally was able to say, no, we'll let the tax people do that. If the thing about taxes is either you really need to get into it and focus on taxes or get out. So I just decided, no, it was taking me way too much time and I didn't enjoy it. And if I had my own business, why would I want to do things I didn't even
enjoy.
Like doing? Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So
yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that. So what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced then in getting the company up and running?
I think I made the same error that a lot of independent businesses, people that are starting, did. I took on too much overhead on the front end. I did finance my own business. So one of the things you think, I think a lot of people think is, oh, I'll just be able to go to the bank and get a loan. In service businesses, that's difficult, really difficult, because they say, hey, you don't have the kind of collateral we're looking for in a business. So I pretty much financed everything myself, put my retirement savings on the line, took on too much overhead in terms of bringing other people on board, renting a really nice office. I felt I had to have all those things. And at that time, yeah, a couple of those things I did have to have. Okay. Now, of course, so many things are virtual. People can start up businesses without as much physical overhead.
Right.
But yeah, it was tough in the beginning, and figuring out that it was to my advantage to specialize. I think I did the same thing that a lot of company owners do, is just take on all clients. Yeah, I got to make some money, take on some clients, and finding out that certain types of clients weren't an ideal fit.
I love that. Yeah, because riches in niches, bitches. A little mnemonic to help you remember that. And it can be tough because you want to help everybody. I struggle with that myself a lot. And I, yeah, it's, we, for people listening, You think about it, last time you bought a shoe, did you buy a generic shoe? Did you buy a running shoe, a hiking shoe, a water shoe, a cycling shoe, a dance shoe, a dress shoe? So it's the whole specificity sells, specialization. And often you can charge more simply by specializing. If I had a course and it was, anyways, if I had a course and it was, or you know what, I like this example better. Let's say your partner's at home with a massive headache and they're just in pain and it won't go away. And they ask you to go to the store to get some medicine. So you go to the store and the drugstore is empty for whatever reason. There's only two products on the shelf. And one is this giant bottle of green goo and it says cures all and it's 99 cents. And beside it is this tiny bottle of 10 pills and it says cures headaches fast, relief in 10 minutes or less, or your money back guaranteed. And it's $4.99. Which one are you going to buy? The cures all. But the other one is so specialized that you just want to have a more concrete certainty in the outcome that you're looking for and paying for, that you're willing to pay more, even though you're skipping the big gallon of, wow, look at the value of this big gallon of thing versus the tiny bottle with 10 pills. I think that's a really good message for everybody on why it's important to specialize. Well,
to add to that, as a service provider, it is easier if you specialize because you don't have to be a generalist. You don't have to know everything about everything because nobody can know everything about everything. And so once you decide that you're going to focus on a particular area, now you're getting exposure to what kinds of problems does this industry have, and you see it over and over again. It makes it much easier to step in and help people deal with those specific challenges. You don't have to go out. And one of the reasons I got out of taxes was because every tax return comes at you differently and you have to go research it in five places if you want to come up with the right answer. And I'm somebody who likes to have the right answers. Okay. Right. And so when you start specializing, then you don't have to search as far and wide because you've encountered the same kinds of circumstances before and figured out how to resolve them. Right. So it's easier.
Yep. Yeah.
In addition to, you can charge more with the answers.
Oh, there's something I share with clients sometimes called the income earning ladder, which means at the bottom are generalists, and a generalist earns what any generalist can earn. A dentist earns what any dentist can earn, typically. But then above them is a specialist, like an orthodontist, and the specialist makes more. The dentist might be able to figure it out, but you don't want to be the guinea pig. So you pay more because they have the specialist training. Again, you're more certain in the outcome of the result that you're paying for. And people who make more than the specialists are the trainers of specialists. And typically why they make more is because one, they can train specialists, that's another income stream. But also if you hire a trainer of specialists, you may not get the best in class, but you should at least get industry average, right? Because otherwise you don't really know, am I gonna get top of class, bottom of class, you're not sure. But when you hire a trainer, there's again a more certainty in getting the outcome that you're paying for. And then the people who earn the most at the very top of the income learning ladder are celebrities in the field, just because of the power of supply and demand. If Dr. Phil, who's just a therapist, I don't want to just keep it simple, he can earn more because he's got a show with millions of viewers. And if he auctions off his time, supply and demand just pushes that rate up. So generalists, specialists, trainers of specialists, and at the top are celebrities in the field. And it's a lot easier to become a celebrity in a small niche than in a giant general market as well. That's a really important note on top of that. What would you recommend to someone who's either starting a business or struggling?
I'd say, first of all, see where you can reduce your overhead. As I mentioned, that's a common mistake. You know, really trim your overhead as much as possible. Secondly, don't go out and start undercutting your competitors. This is a common thing, is that people go, okay, so my competitor is charging $5,000 for a deck. Okay. Right. Hey, I'm going to go sell my decks for $3,500. And that way I can get more business and I'll make more money. There's probably a reason why your competitor is selling something at that higher rate, because lots of times people just don't understand what are all of the background costs. And so they have a tendency to focus on, oh, how much income can I make? So understanding your costs, okay, and then making sure you're going to make a profit on every job that you take on after you count all of the related costs is the very first and most important thing. Implied in there is understanding, keeping track of, and understanding your numbers. Don't get distracted by income numbers, because income, if you end up breaking even, you might as well have just gone and worked for somebody else, because then at least you'd have a paycheck to take home. If right. you're running your own business and you earn $3,500 and it costs you $3,500 between your helper and your materials and your insurances and all that kind of stuff, then you might as well go on fishing.
Right.
Had
right.
a better time. You know?
Right.
So
I think that's a really powerful and really good message. And it's funny, a couple of things that you said, I think I may have mentioned when we, in our meet and greet, that I had spent a significant amount of money to hire 10 assistants to help me go through all the academic literature on business success, to try to look at what makes or breaks success for small and medium-sized businesses. And we uncovered 8 critical success factors. And then we drilled into each of those factors. So the 8 factors were self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And when we drove into the subcomponents of the money management, the things that we found, the pillars of successful money management, and I would love to hear your insight on this, if you agree, if you think I'm missing anything, but the pillars were really low, like leanness, low capital investment, being debt-free as much as possible, R&D spending, having high quality products and services, investing in asset and sales growth, and then capacity utilization, which is a bit of a catch-all. That means getting everything you can from all you've got, from your staff, from the finances you have, from your inventory. Those were really the pillars, the pillars underneath money management. Do you think anything is really missing there, or?
That pretty well covers the ballpark there. I'd yeah. say you got that's a pretty wide net. I think top in there, here's what I see that can happen with people, is they think, I'll look at the money later. Okay, I'll deal with the financial side later. I'm going to backburner that, you know, and then I can look at it a month or two from now. Yeah. And even when you backburner something, it doesn't mean the heat's not on underneath it, and it can light up into flames at any point. When you're late with tax payments, that turns into big penalties. When you don't have your workers' comp insurance in place, there are just a lot of pieces and parts that sometimes people aren't aware of when they start out in business. And doing your best, get out and take some business classes and just start getting a feel for what are all the incremental pieces that you're going to have to track. And when will you need to pay those? Are you going to need to pay a 6-month insurance policy ahead? Okay. Or will you be paying it monthly? And there are a lot of pieces and parts, and yeah, just trying to get your arms around it a little bit before you start, and then keep track of it as you go.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people that win the lottery end up bankrupt years later. And it's because a lot of people think, I'll manage the money better once I have more money to manage. But the problem is that, one, tomorrow is a faraway imaginary land where all 99% of human accomplishment is stored. But also the fact that these people win the lottery and they have terrible money habits, just because they have it doesn't mean they might fix some, but is it enough? And is it in time? And that's where so many people that win the lottery end up bankrupt after, even though they've, and then they, I can speak to this myself. It's very not much a nice thing to say, but it's shocking how fast money can go. That's all I really want to say about that. I've helped people make a large amounts of money, and it is just shocking how fast that money can go. It's not what you make, it's what you keep. It really is. And the name of the game is to stay in the game as long as you can. And so that's a really valuable
lesson. We're throwing a few slogans around. One of them is later is never.
Ooh.
And the other thing that can happen, later is often never. How many emails do you get that you go, oh, I'm going to go look at that later?
Never.
Okay. So Ooh. Later is never. And then the other thing is that when things start stacking up, okay, then all of a sudden they become big projects. And that makes the later even more compelling, because you go, now that's really a big pile of stuff I got to deal with. And then that has a tendency to make you want to defer it. So the more quickly you can stay on top of things and keep them kind of more front burnered, the better.
Can you talk, maybe some people here, because I know a lot of people, they're really good at what they do, or they really love what they deliver as a product service. And almost like you talked about the taxes, they're just not, they're not in business for the money per se. They want to make money, but it's not their focus. What is a simple first, and I'm, this is very vague, but our audience is typically small and medium-sized business owners. What does a simple accounting process look like in terms of a daily, weekly, quarterly process? What does this mean? Does this mean that they have to log all their expenses in an app every day as the day goes by? Does this mean that they're meeting with their bookkeeper and whoever once a week? Does this mean they're requesting financials to look at every morning? Does this mean, what is a really just skeleton accounting process look like?
Oh gosh, there are definitely layers to that, and it depends on what you mean by small. So I would say, oh gosh, when you're first month or two, you can get by with a spreadsheet, okay? And get, you can have columns for the different kinds of costs and rows for the name of who you're paying. And then you can, if you're good with a spreadsheet, you can run totals for each one of those, keep an eye on them. Keeping track of what you're committing to spend, okay, that's accrual basis accounting, okay? What you've spent is cash basis accounting. So keeping track of what you're committing to spend. What are you putting on your credit card? What are you writing checks for? What are you pulling out of the ATM that you go, okay, I'm going to take that $200 out of the ATM and then I'm going to pay Frank. And then 2 months later, you can't remember what the $200 was for. Okay. So keeping track on the, at the very beginning, if nothing else, on a spreadsheet. However, I will say that picking up some sort of software, some sort of bookkeeping accounting software, really will help you in the long run, okay? And getting your accounts set up properly and learning how to do the entries. And I like to tell company owners, man, if you can do this for yourself for a while on the front end, you will save money. It will teach you about what's going on with your books and what you should be looking for, so that later when you hire somebody else to help you, whether it's an external bookkeeper or you hire somebody else or you force your spouse into helping you, which happens sometimes, then at least you'll know that you'll know what to look for. You'll understand how things work in an accounting system. And the other thing that I see lots of times is people don't know what a financial report should look like. What should a balance sheet look like? Mm-hmm. What should a profit and loss statement look like? What should a job cost report look like? And so getting educated as best you can on what you should be seeing as output. So there's input and there's output, okay? The input is recording your transactions as you're moving forward. And the output is what's going to show up on a report that will summarize and show you what's happening on a summarized level, but that you can also look at the underlying detail. Now, whether you sit down and you put all that in daily or weekly, I hesitate to say monthly because then all of a sudden it starts turning into a big project. If you can set aside time once a week to get your entries done, that's probably a pretty reasonable time frame. Now, when you get bigger and you got a lot of transactions, then you're going to probably want to look at having somebody help you. And you can work with an external bookkeeper, okay, or potentially bring somebody in-house, because you do, as a business owner, constantly have to be thinking about what's the best and highest use of my time. And for many company owners, sales is one of the best and highest uses of their time, okay? But knowing their numbers, is staying on top of that, knowing what's going on, is pretty much right up there towards the top. So you have to, one of my friends says, you got to sell stuff and you got to deliver stuff and you got to keep track of stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are three pieces. And of course, there are many other offshoots of those three things, but keeping those balanced, I think, is really important.
Yeah, I heard that for a lot of success, like every successful company, I forget where I heard this, but they like they need a sales and marketing person. They need a product person who's in love with the product, keeping it world class and relevant. And then you need an admin and finance person. And typically, those three people need to be different people.
Ideally, yes. Ideally. But when you're starting out, sometimes you're it.
And even just to develop the skills. Sorry for interrupting. I just remember when I lived in Japan for 3 years, I was doing consulting work there. And I got they call them a cash book. It's just like a little thing that fits in your pocket. And I remember I had a pen with it. And I was so shocked at how much I was spending on chocolate bars. Because I would just pull it out. Anytime I took out my wallet, it was tied to my wallet. Anytime I took my wallet, I'd log it there. And this is years ago now. I'm 40. I was 23 to 26 at the time. But I just remember how shocked I was. And just, it's almost like Sudoku, where you look at this Sudoku puzzle, and after a while, the numbers speak to you. And you're like, oh, that goes there. Oh, that goes there. When you have the data and tracking, you look at it, it's almost like the movie The Matrix. This goes there. Oh, and patterns of math is the universal language of the universe. And so
with your phones, I'm jumping in here with your phone. It's so easy to take a picture of a receipt. And in many cases, that will tie back into your accounting software. Okay. Mm-hmm. But taking the pictures and noting what it's for, just like your notebook that you had, use your phone. Find fast and easy ways to keep track of what you're doing.
Is there any concern around data privacy with this? I know that I didn't intend to bring this up, but there's concern around central bank digital currencies. there's maybe a yin yang of wanting convenience, simplicity, and security, but at the same time having to respect privacy. Can you speak to that at all? What are your thoughts on that?
As a firm, we're always very concerned about security. And first, there are so many layers to that question. There are taking a picture of a receipt with your phone, usually on the receipt, it doesn't have your whole account number. Okay. And then deciding where you're going to store that, okay, is another thing. Some of those apps tie in with American Express, or they'll tie in with your QuickBooks account. If it's a really well-known platform, mm-hmm. you're probably as okay as you're going to get. But on the other hand, we know that there are some big networks that have been hacked. So I certainly am not going to tell people, oh, you'll just be okay if you just use a well-known platform. But mm-hmm. generally speaking, you're probably further ahead. However, on the security side, as people work with their computers and work with their phones, and they're offered all sorts of free games and free this and free that and so on, I'd be very wary of those, because most of those kinds of, oh, here's a freebie for you, there's a cost.
Right.
And sometimes that cost is security. Yeah. That's right. Sometimes that is, you can get all sorts of nasty little things on your computer or your phone and be providing some people.
So how do you
people with your information? So
how do people back up their records? Because I think you're right. If you use a well-known name, there is security in that to a certain extent, but there's also corruption, and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. We've just seen in the last few years, massive infringements, we'll say, on things like free speech and censorship of discourse on social media. Obviously we all just want to help people. We want to make a good living. Most people want the same handful of things. And I think it's just, even for ourselves, forget taxes. We want to know what we're making, what we're spending, of course, for our own finances. Mm-hmm. And how do we back that up? Do you recommend, like, you're all in on a software? Do you keep a backup? Are you supposed to keep records for something like 7 years, 10 years? Mm-hmm. I should know the specific date.
Generally seven. Yeah, generally okay. Seven.
Yeah, 7 years. Like, how do you keep those back? You just trust these data, these softwares that you use, if people are using an app on their phone, or do you have a process like they should really just export it as a CSV, print it out, store it in a filing cabinet somewhere?
Printouts in a fire safe are likely pretty secure. Okay. Mm-hmm. In a home fire safe, if you've got a good heavy duty fire safe, that's probably pretty secure. Okay. Yeah. However, home computer systems, if you've got your PC, and that's where all your data is stored, you are definitely at risk. You're at a much higher risk than if you use, say, something like a hosting service. Okay. Mm-hmm. Hosting services have very, and again, not that nobody can ever be hacked, but just generally speaking, the hosting services have some pretty heavy duty, tight security around them with 2FA and so on. And they do periodic backups, and you can do your own interim full backups as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what we like to recommend to our clients that are working in desktop. They're going to be more secure working through something like that than storing everything in-house. And we got rid of our server a while back just for some of those reasons, because hackers are out looking for people that, and keeping your own internal, your laptop, your own internal computer secure is a much bigger job than you can imagine. And even we had an IT company that was doing all of our security, but nevertheless, they're more hackable. Okay. In-house systems are more hackable. So we generally suggest a server, a hosting environment that is like having your own server in the cloud, but inside a data center that has your engineers and your data engineers and so on working to help protect you. And then having 2FA is two-factor authentication is a good thing. I remember how annoyed I was when we first found out that, oh, there was this particular software we had to put two-factor authentication on it. And I went, shoot, I'm just used to working on my computer all day long. Now that means I got to bring in my cell phone for my two-factor authentication. And then, now I got to buy phones for everybody on my staff so they can do their two-factor authentication. So it represented additional cost. And yet now everything is 2FA, almost everything that we sign into. They're going, oh, you got to, okay, we've got to check it. But yeah, I keep my phone sitting right next to my desk on a little holder just primarily for that. Yep,
yeah.
Primarily
for that. I want to circle back to the basic accounting process. So you talked about, you have inputs and outputs. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you need to input your transactions daily, weekly. It's something that the business owner should do themselves for a while. Just the same thing. If you're going to delegate it, you have to know what you're doing, how to manage it. You have to have some experience doing it. Even if you're not doing it, you can understand why you're not doing it, so you can better understand why the value is in having somebody do it for you. You talked about getting the reports. Now, are these reports that the people should get at weekly? Is it the same as the inputs? You should sit down and enter your transactions daily, weekly, and you should look at your reports daily, weekly? Is that?
Yeah, it's a little different depending upon the report. So we normally say that there are three steps, okay? One is to have a good structure for your accounting. You have to have a good chart of accounts. You have to have, in QuickBooks, you need an item list, which I'm not going to go into. You need to have your customer job list. So there are several structural lists that need to be in place. Okay. And you can develop them as you go. Sometimes it's better to figure that out ahead of time. Okay. And then the next thing is you have to have the training. You need to have some idea, although into it for a long time, put ads out that said, oh, if you can write a check, you can do your own accounting. That's not quite that easy. Okay. But you need some training so that you have some idea of what you're doing. And the third thing is, before you can rely on your reports, you need to go through what we call month-end closing procedures. So there are a few reports you can look at on an interim basis, but just be aware that they necessarily haven't been proofed, double-checked, and so on. So getting to the point of getting your reports, you should have some proofing and balancing procedures in place before you believe what...
I love you mentioned this. Yeah. Because it is such... keep going.
I work with different business owners that come to me, and we'll talk about all three of those things. One is they say, I'm looking at my reports. I don't understand them. I don't get it. I must just be, I'm not an accountant. I don't get it. And I go look at their reports and I go, you know what? I'm an accountant. I don't get it either. Because these reports just don't make any sense in terms of structure, in terms of the numbers that I'm seeing and so on. So it's not the business owner's fault, particularly. They need something set up that's useful and understandable. Secondly, who's doing input in your books? Oh, my office manager. Has your office manager had any training? No. So she's actually, I've had four different people doing my books. And every time the next person comes in, they change everything around because they have their own way of doing it. Okay, yes, there are optional ways of doing things in accounting, but having somebody shifting everything all the time is not a good way to go. Okay, and then the third thing is, who's looking through your books on a regular basis and improving them and balancing them? I never know on a month. It seems like I get a report, and in the middle of April, I think the numbers are one thing. And then when I look at the end of April for the prior month, they've all changed. That means you didn't get your books closed. And somebody's continuing to make entries into the prior month. Maybe they got bills dated in the prior month or whatever. You have to have a closing procedure and you have to say, when are my books done for the prior month? Now, that doesn't mean there can't be corrections that can come in the next month. Okay. But nevertheless, you have to decide when your books are done for that month. And then they need to be look through certain procedures followed to make sure everything's lining up the way they should. And then you should be able to look at the reports. And then if something as a business owner or something looks wacky, then you need to be able to go back and say, why is this? Okay, this doesn't look right to me.
Yep.
And your bookkeeper, whoever, if somebody else is handling your books, that person ought to be able to give you a logical explanation pretty quickly. Not, I'll get back with you on that.
Right.
That's where fraud starts happening. Okay. Mm. And yeah, there's a book out there called Diary of a Bad, Bad Bookkeeper. I think it's still out there. And it really goes into all the different ways that bookkeepers, bad bookkeepers, fraudulent bookkeepers will evade answering questions and pull off frauds. And so I think every business owner ought to read that book because it makes you realize you need to keep your fingers in what's going on and understand what's going on with your numbers, because that's another major risk. And there are fraudulent people out there.
Right. Yeah. I heard that you can delegate a lot of things in business, but two things you can never delegate completely is the money management and the marketing. You have to always have your finger on those pulses, because as soon as you stop and somebody else does it, things just go sideways. It's just right. It's like a garden. You can't pretend there's no weeds. They'll just overgrow and take everything over. And it's just a law of the world for some reason.
And there are many totally ethical, totally honest bookkeeping people out there. But unfortunately, there's that element that isn't. And unfortunately, a lot of them don't get reported because business owners are embarrassed. They don't want to go through the hassle and so on. And so they can continue to circulate. So you need to be careful. You need to know what to watch for. And then there are also some, we do have a set of month-end procedures as a product that we make available. And we put some very basic safeguards in place. For instance, the business owner should be looking through their own bank statement. The bank statement should be mailed to the business owner's home. The business owner should look through it. Same thing for credit cards. Because yes, that's a kind of a, what we call a detective control, which is an after the fact, but in most of the cases of fraud I've seen, had that detective control been in place, at least the business owner could have stopped the worst of the hemorrhaging. Okay. But if they're not checking that, there are also other controls called preventive controls that you can put in place. So there are a variety of those available for business owners as well. And so a control is just something to make sure that the right things happen and the wrong things don't.
Right. So, can we speak, because you talked about tracking the inputs, getting your reports, balance sheet, profit loss, job cost report. You just said something before, a lot of the stuff is, you said, mentioned the detective where it's already happened. And a lot of those reports, what about future facing reports? What are some of the beneficial things that business owners should be paying attention to see what's coming down the pipeline, so to speak?
The first thing that so few people do, and I'll tell you a little story to go with that, but so few people do is creating a budget. Okay. And a lot of people think budget is just a bad word. Budget means I can't spend money on something. In fact, a budget's very powerful because it's really your financial plan. for the upcoming year. And it doesn't, it's your company. You can do anything you want to with your money. If you decide that I've got a really good deal on this thing over here and I'm going to buy it right now, even if it wasn't in the budget, that's your choice. But having a plan at least lets you know when you're diverting from the plan. Okay. Or you can try to beat the plan. Okay. So few people do budgets. I had a question about something in QuickBooks related to a budget, and I called in to tech support. And the tech support person I talked to said, this is really, that's cool. I'm glad you asked me that question. But he says, I've been a tech support person for the last 18 years. And this is the first question I've ever gotten about using the budgeting feature. And I went, oh gosh. And very few people that come to me in the first place have a budget in place. And I bet you there's a big contingent of your listeners who don't have a budget for the upcoming 12 months. You don't have to do 18 months or 5 years or anything, but you can try to project across the upcoming 12 months what's going on. And then of course, having your numbers relate to your income. So if your income goes down, where are you going to scale back in your cost? Okay. If your income goes up, okay, what are the few extra things you might be able to do? So budget is huge. Some people, bigger companies will carry it over into forecasts, which means they'll take where are we now and we'll look at what are we with better knowledge. Okay, so let's say you're a third of the way through the year and you say, okay, here's where we are now. And we know a lot more than when we put the budget together last November. Okay, right. Now, given what we know, what is our forecast for the rest of the year? So I usually suggest people leave their budget in place, okay, to see how are they doing and see an actual versus budget and look at that usually year to date, because month to month is tough to make projections for each month. Although you have to put it in month by month, but looking at your year to date budget versus actual is going to keep giving you a better set of numbers to look at. But then also a forecast given, say, okay, so here's what we have on our books now, and what's our forecast for the next X number of months, given what we know now. So two different things, a budget and a forecast.
I love that. That's great, great, great tips, great advice. So we've really danced around this, and you've already said this a couple of different ways, but to really hit the nail on the head, to just sometimes you have to tell people things with a sledgehammer. Can you just really spell out what are the biggest mistakes you see your clients and other entrepreneurs making? You already mentioned one, they don't have a budget. What else can we add to that list? Just to really, like, if people didn't get it indirectly through everything else we've said, what are the biggest mistakes that you see clients and entrepreneurs making?
Oh, I could come up with about 10, but let's try to narrow it down to two or three. One is not understanding their reports. So there's kind of two facets. One means that they're not even looking at their reports. Two means they don't understand what they should be seeing on their reports. Number three, let's see, did I say that they're not looking, they're not understanding it, and they don't take corrective action about what they're just not using the information that's available to them. Lots of times because they're just afraid to admit that they don't understand it. Okay. As company owners, we are all high energy. We're all pretty smart people. Otherwise, we wouldn't have gone into business on our own. But admitting that there's a side to your business that you don't really understand and that you're going to ask for help with, that's a big step to take. But if you think about it, any good athlete has a coach.
Yep.
And so if you don't feel comfortable with your numbers, if you don't know what you should be seeing, and therefore you just don't look at your numbers, you're cruising to get hurt.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a big, to me, that's one of the biggest things. Another major thing is that lots of times people believe that sales volume will earn them more money. That is not the case in many circumstances. Okay. So if you made, let's say you had $1 million in sales last year, right, and you took home $50,000,
right,
and you go, okay, I'm going to sell 2 million this year and then I'll take home 100,000. it doesn't work like that, because when you bump up your sales, now you bring in a whole layer of different administration, sales assistants, and so on. So if you are usually you're going to be much further ahead by looking at, and I shouldn't use a million, but sometimes I just use a million because that's a number that people can wrap their brain around. Okay. Mm-hmm. But taking a very close look at your cost of production, making sure that you're getting the right gross profit on individual jobs, looking at specializing, those are all things that can have a much bigger impact to your bottom line, disproportional impact to your bottom line, over doing more volume. And if you decide I want to do more volume, sit down and get some good financial projections and say, what's going to change if I do higher volume? Because higher volume means more risk that you're going to take on a job that's going to go sideways on you. Okay. Higher production or higher income means you're probably going to have more employees. Guess what happens when you have more employees? It's going to take you more time to manage the employees.
Yep.
And you can have that turnover. So things start getting costlier as your volume increases. Whereas if you're looking at your pricing and you're looking at your cost of sales and you're paying attention to your numbers, lots of times you can make a much bigger impact on your bottom line. I have some recordings about that, and I just go through and illustrate different ways that you can go in and make a bigger impact to your bottom line.
Very valuable. What do you see coming? What do you see through your periscope looking into the future? We're in, you know, the world where we have geopolitical situations happening right now. There's environmental things happening where economic wheels are turning. Some people may feel there's an unelected group trying to impose an agenda on the world. Where do you, technology is disrupting stuff. Where do you see things going in the next 5, 10, 15 years, perhaps?
Oh, yeah. My crystal ball is downstairs. I don't leave it up here because if the sun comes in wrong, it'll light things on fire. I learned a couple years ago. I had it sitting downstairs with my desk downstairs, and the sun came in and it focused the light and actually started a notebook on fire. So
really?
Okay. Yeah. Crystal balls can be dangerous. AI is coming at us. Politics are coming at us. Economic changes are coming at us. It's nearly impossible for me to make any predictions. The world's best economists, country's best economists, go out there and they're right half of the time. So I guess my best advice is continue to listen to your customers. Keep an eye on your numbers. Keep trying to make sure that the people that you're serving the right market. Where you can specialize, do your best to read the market and stay flexible. Everybody had to do big pivots during COVID. And yet, and some people didn't make it. Some people prospered. I think that the ability to stay open, to stay flexible, and when you're a smaller business, you can do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. You just have to make sure that you keep your mind open and keep looking at how you can use the current circumstances in conjunction with what you know how to do. And if you have to move sideways, and pivot doesn't necessarily mean turn all the way around. It means maybe just moving a foot or two to the left to look at a slightly different market. So way back in the way back machine, when the construction industry was in the toilet for a few years, I just said, hey, look, we're advertising. We're not advertising, but we're putting ourselves out there as being primarily job costing for construction. But I went, what? Manufacturing is doing just fine. And manufacturing is pretty much job shop manufacturing is pretty much the same as construction, except they have inventory. We'll just start focusing on the manufacturing industry. And that got us through what could have been a very
time.
time. Yeah. Just keeping your eye open. Get a pay a little bit for a subscription to the Wall Street Journal and just, it's really easy. I'm not a big fan of watching TV news.
Right. No.
But it's just too horrible and too depressing. And most of it's something I can't do a lot about. But keeping your eye open on what's going on in the world and being aware and thinking towards the future. I'm going, yep, okay, AI is coming. How might it impact me? Be involved with your national organizations, your home builders associations or manufacturing associations. Collaborate. Be willing to collaborate with other people and try to not view it as competitors, but how can we each serve a little different portion of the market? How do we collaborate? Just keeping all of those creative parts of your mind open to how do you make it through these changing times? And there's never been a time when things didn't change. If you look back, nothing has stayed stable over the last 100 years.
That's right.
So, yeah.
And this is great advice. I have pages of notes. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I've just been in a nice conversation with you, Daryl, and just responding to the things you're asking.
Sure.
I can't think of anything other than, I don't know, am I allowed to mention my website?
Of course, I was going to follow up. Yeah, where do people go if they want to learn more?
Okay, our website is called buildyournumbers.com. We have many blog articles out there. Of course, those are all free. We've got a lot of other free training. We do have QuickBooks desktop-related products that can help people, anybody who wants to do job costing. I've developed some adjunct things that work alongside QuickBooks. If you need to know how much your direct labor people are costing you per hour and how much you should charge for their time, for instance. So we have a lot of different things out there. We do have pre-built month-end procedures. Most of these things that I've developed have been in response to client needs. And after I developed something for two or three different clients, I went, if they needed it, there are probably other people that need some of these other things that I developed. That's what we have out there for sale. Oh, and we have 90 hours of online training. So that's something that people can get into and do it on a month-to-month basis if they'd like.
So for people that are interested, go check out buildyournumbers.com, buildyournumbers.com. Diane, thank you so much for joining us today. Knowing you've got your own following, your own staff, your own customers, your own clients, your own things to take care of. Thank you so much for coming and sharing with myself and my audience so we can all do a little bit better.
It's been great being here with you and just fun conversation. So we'll talk to you again soon. Okay.